Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. Today's special guest, we're going to call him a rising star of the media industry, Mike Monaco, one of our friends from the Notre Dame beat back in the day. Mike, I guess, how are you doing? Just for the record, for our listeners, this is a non-emergency podcast, even though there was some emergency news with Notre Dame football and the NCAA today. But Mike, let's talk about more upbeat things. Your future and what the Shamrock bump will mean for you in broadcasting in the not too distant future.
Well, my colleague Eric MacLean, he just put out a photo. Matt was saying this before we hit record of him and now President Joe Biden. I think yesterday he posted that we've got offensive linemen ruling this podcast, but everyone gets a podcast bump, it seems, regardless of position. And I am a loyal listener. I'm in a fantasy football league of Notre Dame guys, and I've told Matt this. There is a team name in our league that is Matt Fortuna in our fantasy football league. So I come from a group of loyalists to the Shamrock.
Did that team finish last or second to last? I'm curious.
You know, they were in the thick of things. They didn't take home any money, but they put together a quality performance that, you know, like the college equivalent of maybe like an 8-4 season.
Just not good enough. Story of my life. I think that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like for people who have maybe sort of followed your career when you were with Notre Dame football, I did a lot of FIM type stuff. I mean, catch people up on what you've been doing. I mean, you know, baseball, college basketball, you've been involved in some pretty cool stuff pretty much out of the gate after Notre Dame.
Yeah. I was kind of just hanging around the Notre Dame beat scene, especially as a student doing stuff with The Observer and with what was then called Fighting Irish Digital Media, what is now Fighting Irish Media, and wrote for Bleacher Report once upon a time as a pseudo beat writer there. Matt and I had a podcast together for some glorious days. But since then, yeah. So I did a bunch of work calling games for Big Ten Network and for FS1, and did that for a few seasons, and then got hired last year to broadcast for ESPN, mostly for their new ACC network, where you guys have obviously had guests before. So right now in the thick of college basketball and calling a lot of college basketball, doing it from home, not going around to ACC venues this year because of COVID. And then I've been lucky enough the last couple of years to fill in broadcasting Red Sox games as well, which for a guy from outside of Boston, grew up a Red Sox fan, that's been incredible. So yeah, it's been kind of a winding road. I did minor league baseball, worked for the South Bend Cubs right out of college, the second semester of my senior year. So kind of done a little bit of everything, and yeah, it's been a fun ride for sure. And I feel like I'm getting old now. It's like 6 years since graduating. It feels like it was like 2 years, and all of a sudden you're a half dozen years out of college.
You still have a full head of hair, so you're not allowed to complain just yet. And for the record, for our loyal,
thank you for having me anyway.
For our loyal Shamrock listeners, the podcast Mike and I used to co-host together was called Still Independent, which I don't think exists and would have had to change its title this year anyway, if it did still exist.
we would have had to have a contingency plan for that.
We'll pour one out for those guys at the end of the show. Mike, do you have any Notre Dame connections before? I mean, I know it's in some ways a central casting, right? Like the Boston Irish guy, kind of like the head coach, you know, ends up at Notre Dame. But you know, what drew you to the place? Did you have any family connections there? Did you ever been there before? Did you know what you wanted to do for a living as you were applying to colleges?
No. So I had no connection to Notre Dame, really. And I applied to a bunch of different schools out of high school and didn't know really where I wanted to go. I actually kind of grew up, even though college sports aren't huge back home in Boston, I grew up a pretty big Boston College fan. And there were some good years on the basketball side with like the Tyrese Rices and Jared Dudleys and Craig Smiths of the world. And then, you know, they climbed pretty high on the football side, too, with Matt Ryan. But I didn't really want to go to BC. I had a lot of family ties there. And then went to college actually thinking I wanted to work in like a baseball front office. And so I idolized Theo Epstein growing up, you know, with the Red Sox connection and fandom. And I had read somewhere that Theo had at Yale as an undergrad written for the student newspaper. And so me, not with much intelligence, I go to Notre Dame and think, oh, well, if I want to be a baseball general manager someday, I'll write for the student newspaper, as imperfect a path as that sounded like. But that's how I got hooked on at The Observer. And then I did that for 4 years. And for the fans who may not know, The Observer, the student newspaper at Notre Dame, and absolutely loved that and stuck with it all 4 years, even once I realized I wanted to go more the broadcasting route of things and do a lot of play-by-play with all sorts of sports on campus.
You know, as our last guest, John Walters, was an 89 grad, so I feel like he sort of spoke to a contingent of the Notre Dame fan base that had a lot of formative memories of Notre Dame winning a national championship and the Lou Holtz era and all that. And so I think how he processes the current state of Notre Dame football is one way. You are much, much younger than that. And so have sort of your formative years of Notre Dame football was not good a lot of times. And while you were a student here, it was a little bit all over the map. So as Brian Kelly wraps up year 11, two college football playoff appearances, how do you sort of process the state of Notre Dame football as a fan, as an alum, from a generation who sort of knows what it's like for Notre Dame to sort of be off the map a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I don't come at it from the perspective of lifelong Notre Dame fan the way a lot of current students do. And Matt and I have talked about this before. Like the first Notre Dame game period that I went to was the USF game. So that was first game of my freshman year. That was my introduction to Notre Dame Stadium and to Notre Dame football. So I think, yeah, I come at it from a little different angle of, you know, like the 4-8 season, you know, obviously a place you never want to be at again and really never should be at again. But I think for me, like I was maybe a little more understanding of one downturn than maybe some of my college friends and college roommates were. And then you look at the body of work, you know, since then in the last, what, four seasons. I mean, it's hard to argue anything other than that they're operating at a level that is as high as what anything but the top three teams in the country of Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. So I think that's kind of where I've settled in and probably have for a longer time, maybe over the last couple of years. But, you know, once you see what's happened two of the last 3 years in the playoffs, you're asking, as you guys have asked the questions before of Notre Dame, like what comes next and how do you take that next step?
What was your best experience at Notre Dame? Who was really your champion, you know, really influential to you as you joined the school paper? When did you come to peace with the fact that you might not be the next Theo Epstein, but you could maybe still have a pretty crazy good career for yourself in this crazy media business?
Yeah, it's a lot of people who were really good to me there. Nathan Bush, who works with Fighting Irish Media, still is there, went to Notre or started working at Notre Dame right around when I was starting as a student. Rob Kelly, who's still currently there, Aaron Horvath, Ryan Camden, people like that came before. Mike Bonner, who then the video board in the 2017 season, he asked me to do interviews on the video board post game and be part of the post game show that he had started with the great Ryan Harris and the great Jack Nolan as well. So that was great to be a part of, but a lot of great people. Like I remember being a student at the Music City Bowl, and it was, I guess, my senior year. And I was there for the student radio station to broadcast that game against LSU. And we were supposed to have a broadcast booth, but something had gotten lost in translation on where the student radio station for Notre Dame was going to broadcast the game from. And this is like minutes before kickoff. And John Heisler like goes to extreme lengths to, nope, no problem. Like we'll figure this out. Kicks some, I don't know who it was, kicks some people out of one of the broadcast booths and just gets us set up. So like, you know, people like that who don't need to worry about what people from the student radio station are doing, but go to that length to make sure that we had a good experience is pretty cool. And I think speaks to the people at Notre Dame.
As you were talking about doing post-game video interviews, it jogged my memory of like one of my favorite post-game interviews of all time that the assembled media was not privy to at all until after the fact. when you talked to Drew Tranquil after the Georgia game in 2017, I think I actually did sort of a look back story. We chatted about this a few years ago, but like what I was interested sort of about your interaction with Notre Dame football players. Like Matt and I sort of have our favorites over the years from a media perspective. Like who was really good to deal with from your point of view as you were kind of in a more relaxed setting with them, you know, doing mm-hmm. more in-house type stuff. Like who was good to sort of connect with, good to interview that way?
I think there's a long list. Names that come to me from kind of the video board time, like my post-grad time, Mike McGlinchey, who as you guys know, was awesome to deal with interviewing him. Brandon Wimbush, for sure. As a student, Matthias Farley, and probably comes as no surprise to anyone that knows him. I had some classes with him, and just a great guy. I had a funny interaction with Kibari Russell too. So this was senior year. yeah, who hasn't? His famous quotes about sluggo roots and defending those. But so I was a senior, so fall of 2014, the academic dishonesty year. And my senior year, I'm out trying to enjoy myself on a Thursday night, and I get a call from a source, which I mean, a student newspaper writer. I didn't have many of those. But so I take the call, and they say, well, hey, Kibari, you know, addressed the team today and said that he's going to be out for the rest of the year. Because at that point, I think it was still up in the air if those five players would come back at any point or something like that. So I'm like, okay, well, we might have a chance to break the story that Kibari Russell is out for the year. So I leave the bar, leave all my friends, go into the Observer offices and text Kibari because I had had a class with him. We had taken a theater class together, of all things, and there were like a dozen people in the class. And it's me, Kibari, and Kibari was one of the main people I spoke to in that class. So I texted him. I'm like, hey, you know, Kibari, I heard that, you addressed the team today and you said you're out for the year. Like, I've been told that. Do you want to comment on that, for the Observer? And he texted me back, LOL, nah. And I was like, well, okay. that's how it goes. I appreciate it. Yeah. And I eventually saw him after the fact and we laughed about it. But funny stuff like that. I mean, just crazy personalities to deal with. Troy Nicholas was a hoot when I was doing Observer stuff. There was a photo shoot because, you know, people who've been on campus know the Irish Insider comes out on the Friday before a game day. And we would always try to do cover shoots with the athletes or whoever was getting spotlighted on the cover. And it was a game against USC and someone had wrangled like a Trojan helmet for Troy Nicholas to wear. And he was all about it gung ho to the point where he wanted to do the photo shoot shirtless. And we were like shooting him shirtless doing this photo shoot. And the great Michael Birch comes out and he's like, Troy, like, do we need to do this? So we nipped that one in the bud. But just a lot of fun personality.
Yeah, that reminded me of a story just as you were telling the Kibari Russell story. And we all have had stories like this when we were working at student outlets in college. Someone had gotten kicked off the team at Penn State or reportedly kicked off the team at Penn State. And I don't want to mention the name, but, you know, my editor texts a random player for confirmation about it. And he wakes up to a text at 3 a.m. that just replied, yeah, boy, with boy spelled like B-O-I-I-I-I-I. Clearly, you know, sober and fully competent. Don't think that was used as an official source record. But that brings me to my next question, which is, their name's different because it's a smaller school. Like you just mentioned a class you had with Kibari Russell. You, I'm sure, had personal relationships or saw a lot of these guys almost every day. It's not like that at Penn State or at a lot of other schools where it's so much, it's just bigger and, you know, there's, you know, more of a disconnect, so to speak. What was that like being in the thick of it? You know, I hate to say playing both sides, but we have to balance our professionalism whenever we're writing about these guys, whether it's good or bad. For someone like you who's still learning the business at that time and who is seeing these guys every day and probably even living among some of them every day, you know, what's that like?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, like, I remember hearing about Gunnar Kiel coming to Notre Dame because people in my dorm had heard, hey, like, Gunnar Kiel, like, a student is moving into the dorm. And I just happened to live in that same dorm. And it's like, you know, you don't get that if students are living in one place and all your football players are living in another. I had a friend of mine who was like, hey, you know, can you pick up like some of my friends from the airport? Like I was going to be around. I'm not around. You're going to be around. I know you have a car. They happen to be football players. And so I roll up to the South Bend airport in my Subaru Outback, and it's Quentin Nelson and Brandon Wimbush. And Quentin Nelson has to find a way to sit in the tiny Subaru Outback that I have. It's just like, it's just different. And I think to your point, Matt, like for someone like me at the time who was trying to figure out the world of journalism and to try to find out like how do you break stories when you're competing against all these beat writers for the same story or the same scoop, or trying to find that, especially on a beat as big as Notre Dame. It's really interesting. And like we would use at the student newspaper like some different approaches to try to get stories. Like when DeVaris Daniels was part of that and was out for the year, he was coaching a women's dorm inner hall like flag football team. So instead of sending like our freshman writers to go cover that inner hall like flag football game, which we would normally do, it's like the entry level position at the Observer to cover inner hall football, men's and women's, we sent like one of our top people, upperclassmen editor Brian Hartnett, who knew DeVaris, to go get an article about coaching this team, but really about like, hey, give us an update on your situation here. So very different, I'm sure, from other experiences at bigger schools, and certainly a little different experience from the general beat like you guys had.
Yeah, it's not to get too inside baseball with media stuff, but like, do you find that like Notre Dame lets the Observer and student journalists sort of like learn, screw up, come back, do different things, like that you're sort of like are able to sort of learn as you go, which is kind of what student journalism is supposed to be about?
Yeah, for sure, Pete. They're great about when the senior day game rolls around, like they let the Observer sit down with every senior, and they make players all the way down to walk-ons to the mm-hmm. top players available for one-on-one interviews, which is pretty cool. And that's a long-standing tradition there. They would give us a one-on-one interview with Jack Swarbrick either once a semester or once a year, the way I'm sure it is with other outlets as well, but still doing that for the student newspaper. And then, you know, as for kind of learning from stuff that happened, like there was a time where there was a group of Observer people who did an interview with Lewis Nix and Stephon Tuitt. And Stephon Tuitt said, I think he said, like, I'm coming back next year, and like said it in no uncertain terms, like recorded all of that. And the Observer ran with that story because that's what he said on the record, and then backtracked from it. But like they could have been furious with us about that. And instead they were Notre Dame. That is like the media relations side was great about that. And like you said, let people learn from it. And that's what it is. Like, that's how you develop the next people, to go into journalism and go on to careers in whatever it is.
I remember that. I remember the fallout from that. Like you said, I mean, I remember talking to people at Notre Dame and they're like, look, he did say this on the record. We can't like
right.
run away from
there was
this.
No dispute about that. Yeah.
He's tweeting that. Don't believe everything you read. It's like, well, you said it, buddy. Like, you know, it happens.
It's a good example, Matt. Sorry to cut you off. But like I learned from that just being secondary to how that played out. And I remember interviewing Will Fuller, part of like one of those group scrums in the group.
I remember being with you during that.
Yeah, we're probably right next to each other. And he, I think, said something similar. And I said to him like multiple times, like, are you sure? Have you told your teammates about this? Like, have you talked? Like, those were my next questions as an example of like how you learn from something like that.
Yeah, it's, we could see you now in your bedroom in front of your bookcase, and it'll never not cease to amaze me how every broadcaster right now has made this work during this crazy COVID era of sports. You told us off air before, like, that's your office. You're calling live Syracuse basketball games from where you're sitting right now, and doing God knows how many other things. I mean, what's that like, especially as a young broadcaster who's still, you know, you're working for the ACC Network, so I don't even want to say you need to earn your stripes. I think you've had a pretty nice career for yourself so far, but you're always looking to do something more and to get better. How challenging has this last year been for someone in your position?
Yeah, it's been really odd. Like I think of, you know, last year was my first year calling games in the ACC. So like I'm still meeting all the head coaches, the assistant coaches, like developing those relationships. And like Tony Bennett looked at me last year and made a funny joke about like how young I look compared to the people that he's used to, like the Tim Brandos and the Bill Raftery's calling his games.
No, Shamrock guest. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Non bump variety.
You should get Bill Raftery on. That'd be great.
Raftery would be great. We might have to rename this podcast if we ever get Bill Raftery on it. But go ahead.
Yeah, do it at a pub maybe. So like just trying to develop relationships with coaches, but it's different now. Like we do Zooms with Mike Bray. Let's say I'm calling a Notre Dame game the day before a game, and you get maybe 20 minutes on Zoom with Mike Bray or with Roy Williams or whoever it is. So it's still been able to find like a workable solution, like I think anyone has during this. And then for the part that you were saying about like where we're sitting broadcasting, not that the listeners can see it, but yeah, I'm in my bedroom. Like I can reach out with my arm and touch my bed. That's how close I am to cramped in here in my Chicago apartment. But the technology is incredible. And I don't think from an ESPN perspective, like I don't think nationally maybe that the people behind the scenes, the operations people who are making all of this work have really been given enough credit and enough of a spotlight. Like it's one thing for, let's say a different network to be able to pull that off on a smaller scale, but with the amount of channels and games that ESPN has, it's crazy that they're able to do this. Like, you know, I call a game at Duke. It's being played in North Carolina. My broadcast partner, Dan Bonner, is sitting in Virginia broadcasting it. I'm sitting in Chicago broadcasting it. And our producer and director and the whole crew, they're on Duke's campus doing it. And somehow, you know, they're able to put on a game and beam it out on an ESPN channel. And through the magic of all of that, like there's only a slight delay that comes through. So yeah, it's been a weird year for sure, but pretty grateful for the technology that we're able to pull this off.
I mean, ultimately, we're kind of joking around, you're replacing Mike Tirico, but like what ultimately, where do you want to go with this? Like what is sort of your, I guess, dream job or what you would, whether it be a sport or just something that, you know, you have your eye on down the road. It's like, this is what I would love to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's very cliche to say like I'm doing it already, but it's what it is. Like, you know, you get to broadcast college sports and bounce around and do a bunch of different sports. And that's a blast. Certainly would like to, you know, keep ascending and keep calling the biggest and best games like anyone would. And, you know, I'm partial to the teams that I've rooted for at different times in my life, whether it's the Boston area teams or certainly a Notre Dame type of thing. But, yeah, I mean, it's something that I feel very fortunate to do and to do a bunch of different sports. Cause I was always that kid growing up that I didn't have the one favorite sport and kind of whatever season it was, that was my favorite sport at the time. So, I've tried to stick with that.
I was hoping to see your name in the mix for the opening in our backyard here for Marquee. I love Bucciambi and I'm glad he got the job, but I mean, you got to do some live Red Sox games this year or this past year, if I'm not mistaken. Right. I mean,
yep.
That's a job that I imagine as a Boston kid, like you don't even like picture existing, right? Because the people who have these jobs hang on to them for 30, 40 years and become as much a part of that team and organization as the players.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. So it was the 2019 Major League Baseball season. So I'd been in my third year working for the Red Sox AAA team and my first year, actually my one and only year as one of their main play-by-play voices. And I remember when I got the phone call and I was said, it was, you know, hey, like the Red Sox want you to broadcast a couple of their games, like filling in for Dave O'Brien on TV. And I was like, what? Like, is this real? But it was so cool, as you might imagine. Yeah. For a guy who grew up rooting for the Red Sox, going to Fenway and then to get invited back with an offer to be more formally a part of the team. the broadcast team last year for the Red Sox, even though it ended up being an odd shortened major league season. But I was down at spring training, did a bunch of games down there, and did a few games in the regular season. So, yeah, for a Boston Red Sox fan who was getting Jason Veritek and Wendell Kim's autographs once upon a time, it was pretty fun.
I would imagine, like, even though baseball is not my sport, that for a play-by-play guy, that would be a lot of fun to do. There's a lot of time to fill. I mean, you have to be really creative, and there's just like a ton of reps in it too. It's not a sport with just 13 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to young broadcasters who want to know, you know, how to get into the industry and how to pave a path to do the things that they want to do. And I was saying this to someone just this week, like, baseball is an incredible sport for that, minor league baseball in particular. And I worked, like I said, with the South Bend Cubs, with Darren Pritchett and with Chris Hagstrom over there who do a great job. Like you're compressing a 140 game minor league season into something like 155 days. So if you think of being on the air for 3 hours, or maybe with a pregame and postgame show, like 4 hours times 140, the amount of just mileage and the 10,000 hour rule that you're getting in such a compressed amount of time is pretty incredible for how quickly you can grow. And then, yeah, it's very different from like broadcasting basketball, where you sit there for 2 hours and it's your head's going right to left and there's action at the rim on every play. Whereas in baseball, you're sitting there telling stories about, you know, being in the clubhouse with different players before the game, or what they're working on at the batting cage, or God knows what, like going off on some crazy tangent, you know, talking about something, because there's plenty of time for that during a baseball season. So it's a very different pace and feel than basketball or football, or certainly something like hockey, which is, you know, ultra fast. So yeah, baseball is a ton of fun.
My wife always makes fun of me because baseball's, I wouldn't say it's my favorite sport, but if there's a game on, I always have it on, especially in the summer. Like I just can't, like I call it the soundtrack of the summer, and you guys are the voices of that soundtrack. As cliche as that sounds, like, you know, everyone in Chicago knows who Jason Benetti, Harry Carey, you know, all those guys, they all know them because that it's such a localized sport that I think, you know, if you're in that business, that's probably as good as it gets day to day. We've had on Jordan Cornette, we had on Muff McGraw, who went on to move up to the world, to the ACC network after joining us. You have no shortage of Notre Dame colleagues, you know, under the ESPN umbrella, but who are some of your champions that you've gotten to connect or reconnect with in this business who, you know, we're at Notre Dame and now we're in broadcasting?
Yeah. I would start with Jordan. I remember Jordan and I were doing a game for FS1 for Fox. It was right before he moved over to ESPN full time. And it was still, I guess, over a year away from when I was, going to get hired there. And so we were doing a Butler basketball game at Hinkle Fieldhouse together. And it was the game where Brandon Wimbush was getting another start against Florida State. That Notre Dame game was going on the same time we were broadcasting a Butler basketball game at Hinkle, and we're both like checking the scores during media timeouts and during halftime and seeing what was happening up in South Bend. But yeah, Jordan's been great. I remember, Matt, we had, when we did a podcast together, you know, talking to Mike Golic Jr. I mean, that's a guy who talk about a total superstar in everything he does. And I remember calling up Mike one time when I was a student for an article at the Observer, and like talking about offensive line lineage, you know, just good people like that who take the time for you. And I've talked through career stuff with Jordan before. But yeah, there's a pretty good contingent of Notre Dame people in this industry. And going back to when I was a student, a lot of people who do exactly what I wanted to do, like JB Long, Notre Dame grad, who's the voice of the LA Rams, Eamon McEnany, had been at ESPN. He's at SNY. He's been great.
He grew up watching our high school games. It's really funny to me to see him and know he's a Notre Dame graduate, but go on.
Yeah. He's been great to me. Pete Pranica, Notre Dame grad, voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, Bob Fitzgerald, Notre Dame, voice of the Golden State Warriors, Ted Robinson, who's done everything. Like when I was figuring out that I wanted to do this, I didn't know that there were so many Notre Dame graduates in broadcasting and doing it at like the highest level. You always think of people from Syracuse who do this, the Mike Tiricos of the world and the Ian Eagles and the Benettis. But yeah, so I was surprised to find out how many there were. And then, yeah, to your point, it's amazing how many of those people, and I think you'll find this anywhere in any industry, you know, from the Notre Dame alumni network, that they're so willing to help and to just make a phone call for you or email for you or something. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you making some time for us here on this Thursday to talk a little Notre Dame, a little broadcasting. It's good to reconnect with you. Hopefully we'll see you out here in South Bend at some point. I don't know when our, when the world will go back to normal, our paths will cross again, but hopefully soon on both.
Hopefully at some point. And thank you guys for having me on the non-emergency pod with all that's been going on for you guys today.
But by the way, what for the record, what was your fantasy football team name?
My fantasy football. So I change it throughout the season, based on how things are going. But yeah, it varies at different times. Some things that are probably a little unrepeatable, just making fun of other people in our league,
like Matt Fortuna. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Mike. We'll see you down the road, brother.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
That was our special guest, Mike Monaco. Some good insights on the media industry and sort of his Notre Dame experience, with some good throwback names of, I didn't expect to talk about Kavari Russell today. So that's always a good day.
Well, Seattle and Notre Dame are in the news together. I don't know if that's a segue.
Yeah. No, I did have a Kavari Russell in Seattle story that I could have told when he sort of big timed me a little bit when I went out to see him in his sort of rehab training to come back to Notre Dame, but another podcast for another day. Notre Dame ran a foul, apparently, with the NCAA over the recruitment of Savelle Smalls, a one-time five-star prospect from Seattle, who has ensnared multiple college programs based on one of the coaches at his high school. Notre Dame, the latest to get in that, a source told me Todd Light was the coach that picked up the show cause from from the NCAA. Obviously, he's no longer on staff. $5,000 fine, some recruiting limitations, which can be significant if you, I guess, don't handle all of your P's and Q's properly. The year of probation really is more about making sure you keep everything clean moving forward, which I think you and I would agree that I have very little concern about Notre Dame running afoul with that. But I guess when you saw this came out, I did not know this was in the works at all. Probably because Notre Dame was barely recruiting Savelle Smalls. And I think, I'm not sure if he cracked his top 12 or top 15 or top 17 or whenever he put out his bloated list of favorites. What was your reaction when you saw this news earlier today?
Surprise. And I hate to use the word amusement, but like, it's like the perfect offseason story. Like the look who we're talking about here, a prospect they never were going to get. Who got in trouble via coach who we both knew was on the way out probably halfway through last year for what we understood to be recruiting shortcomings. So to think that Todd Light got you in recruiting trouble a year after the fact, it's just kind of like, what?
Yeah, it's high irony level on this one. If you're Notre Dame, you're like, give me a break. And then like Brian Kelly, who I think we've talked on this podcast and many podcasts have discussed this, getting more involved in recruiting, he gets clipped for taking a photo, which would seem to lead you to believe it was Lorenzo Styles from Pickerington, Ohio, who will be enrolling in Notre Dame in the next couple of weeks. But it just is, it's just a bizarre, it's like you had a hangnail. Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to have to amputate your hand. what are you doing with this? This, from the NCAA perspective. And I appreciated Jack Swarbrick coming out and being, you know, if I could paraphrase the statement that you got, no, I won't paraphrase, I'll just read it. We made clear to the NCAA our view that the agreed upon penalties exceeded the nature of the infractions. We accept the final outcome of this case. Like, I guess they accept the outcome of the final case, but like, if I have Swarbrick, I would be absolutely livid about this, because people here, Notre Dame on probation, and very rarely will you dig down and be like, wait for that?
Yeah, it's I'd probably take the approach they're taking right now, at least publicly, as far as like, we don't agree with it, but like, let's not make a mountain out of a molehill here, for lack of a better term. Yeah. Like, are the penalties substantial? I mean, reduce official visits by one. I don't think that's that big of a deal. Reduce unofficial visits by 14. I assume this carries over to whenever the first recruiting calendar, as we know it, resumes, because you know there still aren't official visits and in-person scouting going on during these COVID times. But in the short term, I don't think there's any real impact. It's just one of many NCAA stories where you just left scratching your head for a number of reasons. I mean, when Jimbo Fisher got clips this summer, I think it was on July 4th, if I'm not mistaken, I was like, wait, Texas A&M was in trouble and with their head coach. It's weird. I mean, I don't think these are monumental sanctions by any means. No one's who hasn't gotten fired already is getting fired over this. But it is ironic for the reasons you mentioned, right? Like we've talked about Notre Dame's need to kind of spread its wings recruiting wise. And here they were, I guess technically doing it, but not really doing it, because they were never really in the waters with this kid to begin with. And the person recruiting on their behalf, is it a great recruiter, and it's not a part of Notre Dame football program in a coaching capacity anymore. So it's a weird one. I mean, you know, you get the typical, you know, tweeters coming at you with, you know, why aren't they doing this with Tennessee and this, that? Well, you know, look, Tennessee, we're not really sure what they were doing, but they did basically self-sanction themselves to the point where we're going to clear our entire athletic department, and we're not going to pay any of these guys the dozens of million dollars we owed, because we think what we've caught ourselves doing is that severe. So I don't think there's an apples comparison there. Tennessee's going to have to get the hammer, or else it's going to owe Jeremy Pruitt and others a hell of a lot of money. But you know, these things have a very fickle and secretive nature to them. This was the fact that this had ever even been a problem is news to me.
Yeah. One of the penalties is to not recruit the Seattle area, which is not exactly a hotbed that has been producing for Notre Dame anyway.
No, just that high school, not even the Seattle area.
Yeah.
Just that specific high school.
Yeah, you're right. It's the high school. It's not the area. There's this strange bunch of penalties that, you know, I think after, if it wasn't for the academic improprieties of 2014, going back to the 2012-2013, I think this would be easier for people around Notre Dame to be like, whatever, and just blow it off. But because they went through that and that the hell that created on earth in South Bend, like, you know, you do have to sort of take it seriously, even if you're frustrated at the fact that you do.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, that's two times Notre Dame's got hit under Brian Kelly. And I'm not saying that's Brian Kelly's fault, but, you know, under this NCAA structure that the sport works upon, the head coach is technically responsible for everything. So if you're looking for a black mark against him, you know, you've got another one here, but I just can't get to.
Man, you'd be digging deep. If you're like on the list of qualms you had about Brian Kelly, if you're a Notre Dame fan.
Well, as far as off-field stuff, I mean, getting hit by the NCAA, I mean, running afoul of the rules, seeing probation Notre Dame in the same headline, like you said, I mean, it makes some of the less athletically inclined people around the university to get a little queasy. But I mean, I just, you know, it's a story. It's amusing and surprising, but I don't, you know, I take that back. The one thing I didn't read, which might be the most substantial consequence of all this, is a 7-day off-campus recruiting ban for the entire football staff, which, again, if you want to swing up in recruiting, that's not insignificant.
Yeah. It's certainly not a death knell in any way, but like, that's something you got to work around. You know, that stuff is important for Notre Dame, but I think after being stuck on campus for what are we at, 9 months now, they figured out how to recruit off campus without actually leaving campus. Right. They should be okay. They should have those systems in place. So, Notre Dame recruiting, just to, you know, they picked up a 4-star commitment. We're going to talk about like the nuts and bolts of recruiting a lot here, but you know, with Marcus Freeman on staff, Tyson Ford is a 4-star DN from St. Louis. They picked up, I'll be writing about him either tomorrow or early next week. They're, you know, if I'm Notre Dame, I feel pretty good about where things are from a recruiting perspective, especially if Mike Elston stays on staff, you know, Brian Polian is still here. You add Marcus Freeman, basically swap him out for Clark Lee. I think Clark Lee was a good recruiter, an underrated recruiter, but I think Marcus Freeman has a chance to be an elite recruiter. And Notre Dame just, they haven't had one of those on staff for a little bit here.
That is everything we had heard about this guy is aligning with everything I'm hearing from inside the Goog about him so far. And I know he's been there for 2 weeks. You know, how much of a first impression can a guy really make? But that's...
I mean, he has.
He has. I guess I should take that back. I mean, they really think he's going to be a game changer for them recruiting. Obviously, he's coached some really good defenses at Cincinnati, and he's probably going to have his work cut out for him with this one, given the lack of returning starters up front. But I do think Notre Dame football has upgraded in the recruiting department simply by hiring Marcus Freeman. Maybe they're getting another guy in the recruiting department. No one seems to know. Chad Bowden, who worked with Marcus Freeman at Cincinnati, told the Cincinnati Inquirer that he was going with Freeman to Notre Dame. Tyler James of the South Bend Tribune reported that was news to everyone at Notre Dame, and that confirmed that is news to everyone at Notre Dame that I've talked to. So we'll see how that plays out, especially in light of today's news. I don't know if that would affect it one way or another, but there's still at least one opening on that staff right now. You just sent out a tweet related to maybe another opening, which would make things very interesting. Nick Sirianni, Adam Schefter's reporting, is taking the Philadelphia Eagles head coaching job. Sirianni has basically been a mentor to Tommy Rees, dating back to their time at the Chargers, and is a guy he's very close with. Who knows if that means he calls up Tommy Rees, you know, right now or already has and said, come be my OC. I don't know that, but that's one to keep in mind and monitor if you're a Notre Dame fan. But there is a DB coach opening, and not just because Todd Light got fired for reasons beyond what we thought he was getting fired for 2 years ago. Terry Joseph is down at Texas. We could tell you that Kerry Cooks and graduate assistant Chris O'Leary have both interviewed to replace him. Don't know if there's been much movement in that department. As far as finding a replacement for Joseph, there aren't a whole lot of people working out of the Goog right now. As the offseason still goes on, I've heard a few other names who might draw interest. Jamil Adai at West Virginia, the quarterback's coach, is one of them. But we'll see how that plays out. I mean, I think you could do a hell of a lot worse than Kerry Cooks if that's your guy, if you're looking for experience and familiarity with the place and recruiting.
Yeah, I agree, especially with a younger staff with Mickens and Freeman. I'm not saying they need to balance ages and experience, but I don't think that hurts. The way I described it to somebody, I was talking to a player parent, was like, you know, what are they going to do at safety? And I was like, I don't know if it's going to be Kerry Cooks, but when I say worst case scenario, I don't mean this to be an insult in any way, but like Kerry Cooks is there, would love the job. And like you said, you can do a lot worse than that. I think he would be a good guy to balance out the experience parts of that staff, you know, recruiting territory. Obviously he knows Texas very well. But I think that would be good. I think that having an Elston, Mickens, Freeman, Cooks defensive staff would be probably as good as Notre Dame has been on the recruiting front in a long time. And they've had a lot of good coaching staffs on defense under Brian Kelly. It would just be sort of another one of those.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the white whale is you're waiting for, unless you're waiting for a domino to fall elsewhere, which there's still, I mean, everyone you talk to around the country, I think everyone's had this COVID fatigue where it's just like, there was no convention this year. There wasn't your normal schedule of we're going to go hire this guy here. It's been like, all right, season's over. Can we just get a couple weeks here to collect ourselves and see what's what? Obviously it's not the case when you're fighting to get an A-lister like Marcus Freeman, but you know, Purdue did hire a defense coordinator this week. They finally did. Michigan finally made some moves. Northwestern finally made some moves. But look, if Tom Arth, the Akron head coach, goes to work for the LA Chargers, which sounds like that's going to be the case, I mean, there's an opening, much like Bowling Green a few years ago, that could attract a couple of guys at Notre Dame, probably the same guys who were in the mix of Bowling Green last year, Brian Polian and Mike Elston. So it's a weird offseason. You throw the portal in there as well, and it's like, you know, you feel for the guys. I know they're making a lot of money and they're getting paid to be a part of college football, which is a pretty cool job. But like, especially after this year and what everyone went through, it's at some point people need to come up for air. And I just don't see that slowing down as long as, especially with the NFL still going on. And as long as there's movement, particularly from the player standpoint in the portal.
Yeah, there's no question. It's just the off season. There's no really slowing it down anymore, right? Like, it's recruiting was enough to sort of keep you busy covering college football, and like the coaching change window right now of January always happens, but the portal definitely adds an element to that where, you know, it'd be Jack Cohn incoming, Houston Griffith and a bunch of guys outgoing. Does Houston Griffith then decide he wants to actually stay with Notre Dame? You know, Notre Dame could certainly use help at that position from a bodies perspective. You know, whether Griffith's going to be a star or not, I don't think is the point as much as you need some help there. And then you hope that you have a Javon McKinley, Asmar Bilal kind of senior year if you're Houston Griffith. So it's, I don't know. Notre Dame football is never a dull moment, but I feel like college football at large now is sort of, there's something going on all the time. And the portal adds to that, coaching moves to that, recruiting adds to that. It's just, there's just a lot happening.
There is. And you know, especially at a place like Notre Dame, you got to sift through the noise, so to speak. I mean, look, Jack Cohn, me and you could have put that one together, 2-2, perfect fit, perfect kid, need, make it happen. They did. There are a lot of guys in the portal, some better than others. Some that I know Notre Dame has kicked the tires on, and you've got other people at building saying, wait, we didn't even recruit this guy in high school. And now he's flaming out at his college. Why are we going to go out of our way to try to get him here? I know this isn't specific to Notre Dame, but Tennessee has a lot of people in the portal right now, some really good players. Most coaches around the country are scared crapless of recruiting this guy and finding out that he took money or was involved in any number of NCAA sanctions that are inevitably coming Tennessee's way. So I get the appeal of it. You know, it's free agency. This is why the NBA is a 365-day talked about sport on the media airwaves, because they know how to drive up drama in the NFL to a lesser extent from a free agency standpoint. But college football is if it's not already there, it's getting there as far as the movement aspect. There really is no off season. Again, I mean, we did two podcasts in between the semifinals and the national championship game when the season was still going on to talk about Notre Dame's offseason. And here we are today with a pre-scheduled podcast where news breaks. That has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with recruiting sanctions. So buckle up, you know, if you thought it was up, 2020 was crazy, it's done, we're going to get back into our normal routines. No, I mean, spring ball normally is the first week of March. Remember being there with you for their one and only practice and recording a podcast afterward, and never seeing any of you beautiful people in person again after that because the world shut down and don't know when it's going to reopen again. So, I mean, do you have any intel on spring practice? I don't.
I have not heard directly. One of my former colleagues, Tim Priester, said he was hearing first week of April or early April get going. So later than usual. But I think that's all kind of, we're living in a very tentative world right now. So it's not clear that would happen, but I mean, you got to have it at some point.
Is there a spring game? I mean, that's a question I'm getting a lot too. I'm like, yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't even thought of that because I just want spring football.
Yeah.
And a game would be a bonus. But I mean, if you could put fans in the stadium for a normal game, I suppose you could do it for a spring game if it's students only and faculty.
Frankly, I'm more interested in my spring break. Is that going to happen or not?
Well, you always go to like Cancun or something, right? And
yeah.
Big time, all of us.
it's on the books right now. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. So I guess maybe we should wrap up our podcast here and then hope that we don't have an emergency podcast next week. Maybe we could do something regularly scheduled or perhaps nothing at all. And hope that the off season agrees with us.
I'm not holding my breath, but okay. Until next time.
All right. Fair enough. So until the Shamrock returns, whenever that may be, hopefully under good pretenses with nothing urgent to discuss.
There is a second signing day, right? Like, we forget about
there
that.
There is. I don't know if we're going to do a whole podcast devoted to Logan Diggs and whether he ends up at Notre Dame or not, the three-star running back from Louisiana that they're sort of waiting on. But, let's be honest, something's going to happen with Notre Dame football and we're going to have a podcast about it. That's just how the offseason goes. So until that podcast happens, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us today on this episode of The Shamrock.